Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. The Oklahoma Center for the Humanities continues its year-long focus on memory with a presentation by poet Lauren Camp. Camp is the author of four collections of poetry, including 100 Hungers, which won the Dorset Prize, which explored the lives of a first-generation Arab-American girl and her Jewish-Iraqi parent. Her latest collection, titled Turquoise Door, is inspired by the beginnings of the northern New Mexico art colonies. But our show today focuses on a different sort of writing that began when she and her family realized her father was beginning to suffer from dementia. As Camp began to deal with the issues surrounding memory loss, safety issues, loss of independence, and personality changes in her father, she began processing her own feelings through poetry. A body of work has emerged that tries to understand the complex feelings that go along with being either the affected, the caregiver, or the loved one. She's presented her poetry on dementia at the Mayo Clinic and the Alzheimer's Association Caregivers Conference. She'll be speaking on poetry and dementia tomorrow evening at 7 o'clock in the Oklahoma Center for the Humanities event at the University of Tulsa's Terrell Hall Auditorium. And she joins us today on Studio Tulsa. Lauren Camp, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Glad to be here.
Could you start by reading a poem from this new set of poetry that you're writing about your father?
I'd be glad to. I'll read a poem called, And Now His Forgetting Comes. How quickly absolute we, the people who repeat the future on the double strain of figment, an email with new subjects, an aggressive burden, and the transition now to spelling. How many facts for figment, and a few words he will again as comfort, a transition to what might have been a sliver. He repeats the checks and burdens, cannot absolute even one long detail, or even grasp a minute at the moment from the vault. Old man at the end reduced to spelling out his anger, repeating who long into the future. The usual conversation is still words without a subject, empty questions dropped like nouns. How can you ask eventually? He maintains demands and fractions, repeats detached answers with a short new closing, with the facts he can still burden. The rest of us beginning right above our heads to try to sense the random language. It takes forever to courage as we one long detail when the voice switches on the double strain to ask eventually the same opinion and now transition to what is true, to what is slivered, to ask how short the future.
That was a very striking poem. And I assume you're in this poem, you're showing us how your father communicates. Subjects gone, yep. Details of language left out to help give you meaning. Was that the inspiration for this particular poem?
These poems in general have been, for the most part, so different for me because the disease is like living in an altered reality. And the poems allow me not really to experiment, but to try. A straight narrative poem is not going to work in trying to explain what feels almost wild in communication with someone whose ability to structure a full sentence or a full thought gets more and more filled with holes. So, yes.
Yeah. Your latest collection, which just came out last year, Turquoise Door, is a collection inspired by Mabel Dodge Lujan, the socialite benefactress that brought all these amazing artists out to northern New Mexico, people like D.H. Lawrence and George O'Keefe. These so personal poems of your father and your relationship seem so far removed from even the idea of that collection. This must have been a big change.
It's been, actually, I think I've been writing it. I haven't really thought about this, but I think I've been writing them both sort of concurrently. I wrote, they are completely different, in fact, but I think I've written 85 poems about my dad and the dementia, mostly as a way to hold, for myself, to hold or to process or to just cope, sometimes to hold something really sweet. And I've done it all along for 3.5 years now. The Turquoise Door came out last September, and I had been working on those poems for about 5 years. So I was working somewhat concurrently, and it was incredibly nice to have a break to be able to go over and write about Ansel Adams or Georgia O'Keeffe, something that wasn't so tethered to me in every way that I could care about, but that I wasn't responsible for.
Tell us about the decision to write about your father's dementia and how it affects him and the people around him, the loved ones.
My siblings have been, they're not poetry knowledgeable. I want to say they're not poetry lovers, and that's, I'm sure, true. They love me, but they've been incredibly supportive of me doing this and of me getting out and talking about how it has helped me and sharing the poems so that it can help others, so that others can see themselves in the work or see their whoever it is they're caring for or know that this is a possibility. My dad doesn't know anything about this. My father right now is, he doesn't know much. I just spoke to my sister yesterday and she said again, he didn't know me. He lives in Florida. I am in New Mexico. And in the last 6 months or so, he's declined quite a bit. And he used to be so proud of me for what I was doing, but he'd never been able to hold it, to understand it. But he would just be proud of me. Mm-hmm. Right now, he doesn't know anything about this. I'm not sure he knows precisely who he is or who anyone around
is. I would assume, like a lot of families, it's been a situation where you're taking turns being the major caregiver in his case? Is that how it's been?
In some ways, he was living on his own in Philadelphia, and my sister and I and my brother went to throw him an 80th birthday party, and it became extremely clear that he was not doing very well. He would look at me and my sister, she's 2 years younger, and we look nothing alike, and he would say, which one are you, and who are you? Which was incredibly shocking. It just became clear all the different ways that he was not actually fully settled into being able to take care of himself. For example, on his bed, which he wasn't sleeping in, which was fine. He had somewhere else he was sleeping, but on his bed, he had lined up months of mail by size, unopened. Just all the catalogs went together. It was all very organized. All the legal envelopes were together, lined up, and nothing had been opened. Nothing had been dealt with. And so there were things like that. And for maybe the first year or so, as we tried to figure things out, it was kind of all hands on deck. It was nonstop. I thought I had kind of given up my identity to make sure I had held on to my dad and what he needed, how to care for him, how to make sure he was safe, how to make sure that his bills were paid, that just everything. It was consuming. And that's the kindest way I can say it. It was an incredibly hard year.
Had he been very independent through most of his life? And so I assume this came as sort of a shock. Or had you been seeing decline for a while?
When I go back and look at some of my poems, some of my notes and poems are like little bits of poems, not really whole poems devoted to him. I see references to some forgetting or some confusion. It's a strange question because it came completely as a shock and it shouldn't have. And so in a way it didn't. His mother died of Alzheimer's, two of his brothers, several first cousins. It was very riddled through his family. And as I was cleaning through his apartment after we had moved him to Florida, I found cards. I found everything. He saved everything. And I found cards for me for his 75th birthday, for example, where I say, no, I don't think you're forgetting. I think you're fine, Dad. So that reminds me that he was worried about it.
Yeah. There is a longer poem that you've written about, I think it is literally about cleaning up his apartment. And it's very interesting. And I know anyone who's lost a parent, this is something that you all of a sudden discover this whole other life of that parent because you're cleaning out the house, you're cleaning out an apartment or whatever. And all of a sudden, all these things that maybe weren't apparent become apparent. I thought that was a really, it's a very long poem, but it's a very striking poem.
Right. You know, I spent those 3 days, my dad was so independent. And so he was so complicated. This is part of why I'm having trouble answering directly your questions, because he was unendingly complicated. He was generous and he was secretive. He was loving and he was controlling. He just was wildly complicated as an individual, which made him difficult to be with and also mesmerizing. Somebody said to me that, "I think your father is your muse," and he certainly is right now, or has been, but he has been for a long time. He was born and raised in Baghdad, Iraq, where his family had been for generations. And he never spoke to us about that childhood. He told us about the day he arrived in the U.S. It was October 12, 1950, and nothing, virtually nothing that came before that. And so that became something I suddenly was very interested in, and I spent a lot of time researching and imagining what his childhood must have been like and writing poems about that. And that became my third book, which is called 100 Hungers, and is in a way a memoir of him, for him, and a memoir of my childhood and my growing up intersecting with his culture and the rituals and the language and the food of his culture. So he's been on my mind a lot for a long time.
But in your everyday poetry, I know that collection was a sort of an exploration of this hidden side of him. But in your everyday poetry, do you find as you're looking back at some of that, that some of these complicated parts of your father show up in all of your writing, or at least some of your writing?
No. It shows up certainly in these two very specific projects, 100 Hungers about Iraq and the dementia poem. Otherwise, he doesn't show up that often. But that's a lot of poems. I mean, that's probably an eighth of what I've written. It's just poems about my dad, which is nuts.
I was really struck by one poem called "The Deep Concentration of Breathing," and there was this first line that just really got to me. "Though my dad still converses in barbed recitations, all that anger somehow got stitched with small cells of silence." And I think there's a lot of imagery in some of these poems of that loss of finding the right word and being used to hearing perhaps your father go on nonstop about it, whatever subject he's talking about, and all of a sudden that silence is what gets at you.
It's been very fascinating in the past 3.5 years as this has really progressed, as we've become, my family, my siblings and I have become aware of what is happening, and as we're watching Dad lose bits more. One of the things that happened that was an incredible gift for all of us was that the things that had triggered my father, he couldn't hold on to. And he became the person that I think he always was underneath, very loving, grateful, generous, happy, things we had not seen or had not seen well. And all of a sudden, that was who he was all the time. So in a way, as we were losing him, we were also gaining this very sweet final years with him. And that's been just quite a gift for all of us to have a chance to really love him, let him be loved. And he's happy to let us do that, where before he was too independent, he was too determined, too controlling.
Was there anger in there? Because and I'm just, from a casual reading, the barbed recitations, there's all these allusions to anger, to complaints. It's almost like that has melted away, is what you're saying.
That's exactly right. That's exactly true. And the poem you're talking about is it's a form of a poem. It's called the pantun, and it's a 15th century Malaysian form that allows for for lines of the poem to repeat. So things circle around and around. A line you hear somewhere, you'll hear somewhere else, which is a good form for dealing with something hard.
My guest today is Lauren Camp. She is a poet, a collection of four poetries. The most recent is titled Turquoise Door. But what she's also been writing about is poetry on dementia and her father's journey and her family's journey with their father. And she'll be speaking on poetry and dementia Thursday evening at 7 o'clock at Terrell Hall Auditorium on the University of Tulsa campus in a program sponsored by the Oklahoma Center for Humanities, part of their continuing theme of memory. And she joins us today on Studio Tulsa. I'd like you to read another poem, if you could. I was really also struck by the one called His Kingdom of Brooding, because we've been talking about, it sounds like it's not all sweetness in life. There's also issues of this independence being curtailed, it sounds like, and at least in this poem, His Kingdom of Brooding.
So I'll give a little background on this. I mentioned that we went to Philadelphia, where he was living, and threw him an 80th birthday party. And it was mostly family. And in that short visit, it became very clear that my father couldn't take care of himself. And more than anything, none of his children were nearby. And more than anything, I was terrified that he was not safe, that he would think he was safe, that he would go to an ATM to get out money and that someone would mug him. Or I just was scared. He was getting lost. I mean, there were a lot of things. And so with much discussion among my brother and sister and I, we moved him to a memory care facility. So that is where this poem starts. His Kingdom of Brooding. Dad paced the 12-by-15 room with a green cap in his hand. Only when he was bereft did he call. His calls came unending. Then many messages. We had bought him the recipe for safety. He mumbled about the locks. Now he could no longer travel the aisles of clothes. Of course we apologized. Each time we entered his room, he pulled open a drawer. After that, another. He named objects and light. Each hour he saw different afternoons in panes of wide rectangles. He called me dear, which was a shimmer. The eggs came all runny with biscuits, and he made it clear he'd never take part in the singing, though he'd voice the familiar rhythm of anger. He said he missed bread with its crusts. He did nothing each day, but the outside was pleasing. Bougainvillea and mandolins, or that's how it seemed. He was cleaned of all but the worries. He had cigars, but wanted only the tin. He smoked in the garden and said they were worthless. In his room, he again walked in circles. Could we return him the city? Concrete would do well, he reminded. Could we drive him to places with outlines? We were delicate in our answers. We interrupted him, and his thoughts mingled, departed. Dad used words like otherwise and washed up. He wanted to organize paper clips in his old apartment. We taped his beautiful face on the door and told him to always turn left at the orchid.
How has this writing of poetry helped you deal with the emotional turmoil, all of the issues involved with watching an aging parent decline? How has it affected you?
This has been the only thing that has really given me any sort of, I guess the word would be agency, any sort of control in a way over or ability to hold what is happening. Instead of having to just simply surrender to it and watch it and hurt from it, the writing has given me a way to shape it into something. To hold it, sure, and I pay probably better attention to everything because I'm gathering all the details in a way. I'm sort of the daughter and the witness slash poet. But it has given me the ability to to step a little outside of the absolute trauma of watching a person disappear in front of you and figure out what this is all about. It had given me the chance to learn a little more about the disease and the brain, just how the brain works and when the brain stops working, and a way to look at how everybody is responding to this, from the nurses, my sister, my father's extended family, him, me. So it's given me something to do.
You were talking about shaping it and helping you shape this experience. Shaping it into what? I guess that would be the question I have. Is this something you feel like that can be helpful to other people? I know you've been speaking to places like the Mayo Clinic about it, but it seems like every journey and every family's journey is a personal journey.
That is completely true. But one of the things that I tell my students is a quote from Lorraine Hansberry, who wrote A Raisin in the Sun. The quote is just a phrase, the universality of specificity. So if I tell you my family's journey and you've had a similar journey, or you, with dementia or Parkinson's or cancer or whatever it is, with a parent or with a whoever, someone older, you then have the ability, hopefully, if I've done my job right, you have the ability to connect to your own experience. And I see that as true over and over. I'm not summing up the disease. It's not my goal to teach about the disease. It's my goal to say, here's what's happening. Here's how I see it. And also to pull the sentimentality out of it. I'm not after just making people feel sad. It's not all sad. It's a bewildering disease, but it is not, it's not all sad. Some of it's just fascinating, truly, if you can step aside and look at it.
That's, I think, the most difficult thing for a loved one, to step aside into the role of witness as opposed to loved one, with all of the deep love that goes into the person affected, but also all the baggage that goes along with that. You know, something that you've alluded to during the course of our conversation.
Right. It's kind of, I guess it's helpful for me to think that I'm talking to someone else. I'm explaining to someone else, mm-hmm. who either knows about this, is a caregiver, or will at some point, because there's no cure for this disease. There's, at this point, and the statistics, right now they're saying 5.7 million Americans are living with Alzheimer's. It's crazy. And so I think in a lot of ways it's also familiar, or will be familiar, to a lot of people.
What's been the reaction from those outside of your circles to this poetry? I know it hasn't been circulated in a book form, but you've published in journals and the like, online journals. What's been the reaction to it?
I've had a lot of support from publications for it. It is true, it hasn't been published in a book form. That's my doing more than anything else. I feel too close to the material and the situation to figure out how to put this together. So all I can do is write the poems individually and maybe get those out. But the reaction from the literary world has been terrific. The reaction from caregivers has been wonderful. Doctors have been curious, the medical community. So to the extent that I've gotten it out, I've had good response to it. And that isn't why I was writing it. I wasn't, I write for myself first, and I write to make good poems. That's my goal, whatever I consider good poems to be, not necessarily what you or anyone else consider. I don't think that far when I'm writing. And then ultimately when it's done, I really hope it reaches people, a person or a group of people, it doesn't matter.
I'm interested in the reaction from the medical community, from doctors who are trained so early, even though many of them are compassionate, to be dispassionate in how they treat their patients. What's been the reaction from doctors?
When I spoke at the Mayo Clinic, I guess that was a year and a half ago, maybe, the doctors in the audience wanted to know what they could do, how they could help the patient. And I think the real answer is, how do you help the family, which might be the patient, but the absolute burden on caregivers is worth noting. That just for anyone who has been a caregiver for any extended period of time, it is entirely depleting. And caregivers need a lot of support and a lot of awareness of how they're existing through this situation, whatever it is. And so I think in some ways, the doctors are attentive to the patient and to the patient's actual physical manifestations. But I think there has to be some kind of attention, or at least acknowledgement of the caregivers and what the caregivers need to be able to then, when they walk out of the office, take care of the patient and help the patient, and help them take care of themselves to help the patient.
Are you still writing about your father today?
You know, it's a wonderful question. I have not really been, because there's not very much I can figure out that isn't empty.
Mm. I think that would be horribly depressing to even to try to write about, when most of the vestiges of who your father was appear to be missing.
That's right. Yeah, that is right. And so that means for the last several months, I guess, I haven't been able to find language to say nothing. Which, so as I said, if it helps me, you know, if it helps me to have something to shape, right now I have nothing on this, in this situation, in this life situation, I have nothing I can shape about this. So it's a little bit hard right now.
I really wish you peace with what, you know, this situation as it goes forward. And I know there will be many people who want to hear more of your story Thursday evening. Lauren, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Rich.
Poet Lauren Camp speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa. She'll be speaking on poetry and dementia in a program sponsored by the Oklahoma Center for the Humanities, part of their year-long focus on memory, tomorrow evening at 7 o'clock at the University of Tulsa's Terrell Hall Auditorium. More details on the event, visit humanities.utulsa.edu. By the way, before focusing on poetry, Camp was also an accomplished visual artist, and one of her works is actually in the collection of Tulsa's Sherwin Miller Museum of Jewish Art. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.